The Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting has now commenced. It is June 5th at 4:02 p.m. This is a virtual meeting. We ask that you mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number to unmute to speak, dial star 6 on your phone and only use the chat function to request to speak. Also, to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio. I will do the roll call at this point. Maggie Amato-Tellez.
Present.
Mary Ann Beerling.
I'm here.
Mindy Bernstein.
I just put her in, so it might take her a second.
Let's see. Mindy, are you with us yet? Oh, there you are. I see you. Vicky Cusino? Serena Warake?
Present.
Lori Meserbo? Tisha Tallman. Tisha is not going to be here. Jim Toful.
Hi, I'm here.
Ray Winch.
Present.
Kenny Wong.
Present.
Alan Solot,
Present.
Jay Young, that is me, and I'm here. Ex officio members, Ann Janeka.
Here, sorry, couldn't get my mouse over.
Corin Manning. Marcos Ismail. And Michael Edmonds.
I am present.
I'm here.
And Marcos is here. All right, we have a quorum. Let's get this party started. The next thing is to approve the May meeting minutes. Are there any updates or changes that need to be made to the minutes? And if there are not, I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, the May meeting minutes are approved. Moving right along to the call to the audience. The call to the audience is limited to 3 minutes per speaker and a total of 10 minutes. All speakers must share their name to be recorded in the meeting minutes. Please remember, the call to the audience may not result in discussion with members of the commission. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience, and speakers may not be disruptive. CEHD members may only respond to criticism and request that items be placed on a future agenda for discussion. Members of the audience may still participate on agenda items as per the bylaws of CEHD. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak today?
No hands raised yet.
I miss Victoria. She always had good things to say.
Yeah. Last call. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak? All right, y'all. Next on the agenda are our report outs for our action plan for addressing homelessness. So each subcommittee will take a few minutes to report out and give an update on where things are. We have a long time for this today. I don't know if we'll take all that time, but after each subcommittee has a chance to report out, we can certainly have a more general discussion if needed. If not, we might end up getting out a little early today. So with that, I also know that Tisha is not here, and I also know that her subcommittee did not meet. So I think that just leaves me and Jim to report out, and I can go ahead and get us started. So the Equitable Housing Strategies Subcommittee met on May 20th. And just as a reminder, we are focusing on eviction prevention strategies as it relates to homelessness. We had a good meeting. We reviewed a list of strategies from various sources about eviction prevention programs that are currently going on and that are, you know, having some success. We looked at Philadelphia, we looked at Houston, and we didn't go into great depth, but we did identify those cities as having effective programs. We also put together a list of strategies that can prevent eviction and help to prevent homelessness. We put that together just preliminarily, kind of off of some ideas that we found in research, and are looking to dive more deeply into that. And then one of the things that we're going to try and do kind of in the first meeting or two, and particularly focus on next meeting, are really trying to get our heads around what resources, programs, et cetera, are currently available in Tucson for eviction prevention, you know, just so we can have a good idea, obviously, of what is available, what's working, and then kind of go from there to see if maybe there are some other strategies that could be employed. Maybe there are some other places, like I mentioned, that that are doing some things that could be adapted to the needs of Tucson. And then we are also looking at scheduling some folks to come and present to us at our subcommittee. We hope to have at our next meeting, our June meeting, we hope to have Keith Bentley come and present to us and have him talk about the work that his research team has been doing around this topic. In July, we hope to schedule Kat Davis from TPCH to give us an overview of TPCH. I know we've talked about that quite a bit, but we wanted to get more in depth there. Have her talk about the update to the TPCH strategic plan and any gaps that she has identified or TPCH has identified in terms of eviction prevention. And then in August, we're hoping to get Lee Hopkins and Brandy Champion to present on community safety, health and wellness, and the gaps and needs that they're seeing. So I feel like we got a good start. We got some at least working documents that we can build off of. And I think at this point have a plan about where we need to start and kind of where to dig in. And, you know, I think one of the things that is pretty clear is that we're all going to have to put at least a little bit of time into kind of figuring out what's going on and researching, you know, possible strategies for eviction prevention so that we can, you know, have something to put together by the end of the of our time. You know, 6 to 9 months, I think, was what we were shooting for. That is what I had written down and what I remember from our meeting. Was there anything else that I missed, Alan or Kenny? I think y'all were there. I don't think Ray was there. Anything else that y'all would add to the summary I provided?
Jay, I don't think so. My memory wouldn't go any further than what you just said, and you sent us an email before, and you were looking at that email, so I think that's pretty accurate. One thing I guess I would add is I was kind of tasked with this idea of putting together a card to give to potential eviction defendants or others that would recite some key rules or laws that might assist them with facing some trouble with their landlord. And I was started working on that, haven't gotten very far, but it is on my radar.
Jay, I have a question for the team whenever you all are done, if any of your other team have a
Go ahead. What you got?
I was just wondering if y'all had looked into our emergency eviction legal services that we have in the county. It is an award-winning program. We have our attorneys that can represent people who are in eviction proceedings. So if they've got an eviction filing or something, if they're about to be evicted, they can call our EELS hotline. And then I have all the information kind of at hand if you guys want me to just send it or put it in the chat right now.
Yeah, that would be great. And I know
Yeah,
that.
so yeah, and we have what are called I forget what they're called, like eviction they're special court. They don't have to be attorneys. They just have to have this special training, and they do it here, and I think they do it in Houston or some other state that's not far. And that has been a really good, and we have had some really good outcomes there. So I will send that information in the chat right now so that you all have it handy.
That would be great. I appreciate it. Marianne?
Yeah, a couple things. One is Ray has asked if she could give a manufactured housing task force update. And I think we should include that as part of our report outs in general.
Yeah, it's on the agenda at the end.
Oh, is it?
We didn't get to
Okay.
give it last time because it got cut off, but also may not make it all the way to the end if we have quorum.
Okay, I had some questions on what you were talking about, Jay. When we were in our retreat, we spoke about having TPCH explain how it works and what it does to the whole commission. And I'm wondering if that can still happen, because I think that's going to be beneficial for all of us. Like in the housing group, we had a lot of discussion. And I think understanding TPCH better would for the whole commission would be good given this direction we're taking. And just a question, what is the focus of Tisha's group with regard to homelessness?
Somebody help me out here. I know we're eviction prevention and then, or homelessness prevention. And then I know, Jim, y'all are looking at kind of supply related.
Housing First, the subcommittee is focusing on services.
Services.
Okay.
No, you're good point, Marianne. I know that we had talked about that and about having. TPCH give a more in-depth presentation to the full commission. Maybe instead of having them present just to our subcommittee, we could have them present to the entire commission. I'll certainly look into that. That's yeah, I remember talking about that. So appreciate you bringing that up. I saw a few hands. Mindy, did you have your hand up?
I did, but I put it down because it was about the Housing First committee.
Got it. Kenny, go ahead.
Yeah, I do remember Kat came in from TPCH came in and presented us a bit of information. Would this be different, or is there something that we missed through that? Just wanting to make sure that we're not duplicating, information that we've received. And I think she had remember she had talked about some of the strengths, weaknesses, alignment with the commission's priorities. And I don't know if that those slides just I think they were shared out.
Yeah, that's thank you for reminding us, Kenny. I did not remember that. It just kind of in the moment, but I guess what are the thoughts of the group about what information has been presented to us about TPCH already, and then what else we want to know? I'd love to hear some more, get some more input. What are y'all's thoughts? Go ahead, Mindy.
One of my loves is that they be invited to attend this meeting every month, just ongoing, because it's additional resources and They have a unique view.
I can also let the commissioners know that Kat Davis, who is the TBCH manager, she is the staff liaison for the Housing First subcommittee also, to provide y'all with information on services.
Jim?
So the way I remember the TCPH coming up from the retreat was we were looking at examples of what other communities have done to help address the homeless issue. And in Houston, they had a centralized database that they used to coordinate and track services so that when a person, it was like a centralized place where a person could call. It knew what services were available, and just to make sure that the services that were available were being used efficiently, and that you know, some weren't going unused while others were maybe being overloaded and things like that. So that's, you know, when we brought that up, we said, well, TCPH is doing that. And I think I asked them the question. They said they're not really doing that, but I didn't fully understand exactly what they said.
I can provide a little bit of context there too, right? I mean, Kat was at the last meeting and gave a kind of presentation, right, overview of TBCH and their strategic planning effort that they're undergoing right now. And so asset mapping is definitely come, like a more robust asset mapping has come up several times. So I think you're correct, Jim, that I think Kat's answer was, we've done that in fits and starts. And one of the, a potential goal that's coming out of that effort is deciding whether or not to dive more into that centralized asset mapping. And so, right, Kat is the staff liaison on the Housing First subcommittee. So I think naturally she can kind of keep that group up to date with the TPCH strategic planning efforts. And maybe in the fall or something, you know, like I think like as that group kind of goes through their strategic planning, trying to do some intentional work around how TPCH's work aligns with the city's work and the county's work. And trying to marry those a little bit better, and also have folks work on their work within their strengths. So I think potentially some presentations as we go through that strategic planning process might be helpful for the whole commission. Kat is presenting to mayor and council at their next meeting too, so that might be worthwhile for folks to tune into.
All right, so where does that leave us then with how we want to proceed? You know, Marianne was suggesting that we, you know, have Kat present. I forgot that she did present. So we have had that. There's the idea from Allison about, you know, maybe having TPCH, and whether that's Kat or somebody else, you know, circle back in a couple of months after they've had some time to work on the strategic plan and these other items. And also, you know, like I said, we're looking to schedule to have her come to our July subcommittee meeting. So, you know, obviously folks are welcome to come to that as well. So I don't know. I mean, it kind of sounds like maybe we put off her coming to the entire commission again for a couple of months. Does that sound reasonable? I see a few nods. I don't see anybody shouting me down. So.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Okay. Great. Anything else regarding my update for our subcommittee before we move over to Jim? All right, Jim, take it away.
Would it be possible for me to share my screen?
Yeah, let me give you co-host capabilities also. You should be good to share now, Jim.
He wants to show his houses.
So it was our understanding, we kind of went in circles about this, and we rat-holed into a couple discussions that primarily my fault, but this is the action plan template which we received, and it's my understanding this is what we're all tasked with completing, right? So is that the correct assumption?
I mean, yes, I think that's accurate. The tool is there to help, guide us in our subcommittee meetings, and then also give us kind of a similar template to report out from. So I think,
right.
Multiple uses, but yeah, I think you're basically correct there.
Okay. So I figured I'd just show you where we are right now. It's a work in progress. So this is the housing options subcommittee. A priority topic, as we all discussed, is homelessness. So we separated out the objectives and the desired outcomes, and some of these kind of fall within housing options, and some of these, I would say, fall outside of housing options. So these are the five objectives that we came up with, which is to reduce the incidence of people entering homelessness, to create living situations for people who are experiencing homelessness, who have mental illness and substance abuse conditions. So this is like the Housing First model, but many programs just provide for housing. It's imperative that supportive services are also go along with it. So reduce the financial burden on owners who rent to people with mental or unknown behavioral issues. Update the zoning to allow for acquisition of existing buildings and the construction of new buildings for sheltering homelessness, individuals with homelessness, and identify additional sources to boost the supply. So those bottom two are definitely are part of the housing options, I would say, subcommittee. The other three may be outside of our little realm. So our desired outcomes are to increase the funding for homelessness prevention assistance with required services to gain income. Second is to create a new brand of communal communities with private quarters that focus specifically on recovering from mental illness and substance abuse for no less than 30 days and up to 150 days of temporary housing with treatment. Modify the requirements of sources that invest in the development of housing for people with mental illness and severe issues. And then the zoning as well. Zoning changes with neighborhood input that creates safe spaces to shelter people. So the task, we didn't spend too much time on the task. We were, for the most part, focused on our objectives and outcomes. And we started to dive in this. I don't really want to spend too much time talking about it. You guys can read it. But that's basically what we came up with so far. And I think the next meeting, we're going to try to continue to flush this out. Although I think we're going to have an opening in our subcommittee. So we might need to get somebody else to join the housing options subcommittee. So I guess Marianne and Maggie, if I missed anything or misstated anything, let me know.
Yeah, Jim, could you put that back up, the first page?
Sure.
Okay, so with regards to housing options, reducing incidence of people entering homelessness, so basically that's about people who are in housing and helping them maintain that housing stability. So some of it relates to maybe eviction prevention, but with regards to the housing supply, keeping people in their homes was one of the things that we discussed about. And then another look at a different kind of housing, which is, creating living spaces for people who have these huge barriers of substance abuse and mental health services that are not getting services under the current conditions in which they are provided in Arizona. So we're saying, go outside of that system and create something better that does give housing to people while they're getting treatment. And that's another way, because we're talking about housing options for people who are homeless. So that is a real housing option for people who are homeless. And then reducing the financial burden on owners who rent to people with mental illness, the access, DES, and places like Home Inc., they are forcing us in as owners to take the certain individuals, and it's cost a lot of money and damage. And so we're hoping that the development community, the housing development community, will say, no, we're not, we appreciate the money. Yes, we'll serve this population, but we're not going to do it the way you've been doing it or requiring us to, because of what happens to our assets. So those first three that Jim talked about, that's how it relates to housing options for people who are homeless. I just wanted to clear that up.
We might as well.
Say that what?
I think someone accidentally unmuted.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Thanks, Marianne. Mindy?
Thank you. I'm not quite sure if this conversation belongs here. I'm noting that no less than 30 days and up to 150 days housing, that is, in my opinion, an insufficient amount of time. It takes a person's brain 18 months to heal from meth. So when we're putting such low number, in my opinion, my experience, 30 days to up to 150 is just insufficient in putting it out there. For people to recover, in 30 days, we're just starting to see people relax a little bit enough being in an environment. So I would just like to put out there that you relook at the number of days that services are being offered.
Yep, you're correct, Mindy.
You end up with a high number of recidivism, higher recidivism when you don't really get in there to treat fully the individual as each person needs it. Another piece I'd like to throw out is we're using the word substance abuse disorders, and we're kind of looking at it more as substance use disorders as the language that a bit more it's not that, yeah, that's a language that I'm a little bit more comfortable with, is substance use disorders rather than substance abuse. It's more politically correct, and it's used a little bit more frequently in the community. So just throwing
that. Yeah, but that's not really what it is.
What?
It's an abuse of substances.
Well, it's a substance use. Okay. Okay. We can have a broader conversation about that. That's just me. And
I'm going to stop sharing.
Yeah. I'm going to mute myself.
Thanks, Jim. Any other input about the your subcommittee, or is that it for y'all?
Maggie, is there anything you want to add? Serena, anything you want to add?
And Jim, never stop sharing.
No, I don't have any.
All right, thank you, Jay.
Jim, is there any are there any resources or needs that y'all have at this point in your subcommittee to move the ball forward? I'm just looking at the agenda for today and Southwest Decision Resources. Yeah, I'm just looking at the report out structure. I don't know how well I followed it, but one of the bullets is, you know, any needs or resources to complete the action plan.
From Southwest Resources, I don't think so.
Or just in general as well, I think.
Well, I think we're going to need another commission member here soon. You know, I think this next, we didn't really have some of our ex officio members attend. I'm going to see if I can get some other people who are not commissioners to join us and kind of help with some of these discussions. You know, I think the zoning issue is something that we might be able to sink our teeth into. The county's proposal for the 3 cent property tax increase is something else I'd like to, you know, make sure that we get behind, because I think that will raise a substantial amount of money, and would have a significant impact in our region if so we could get something like that passed. So, you know, I think those are the two things of the discussions that we've had that I definitely want to focus on. I know that, you know, Marianne and Serena and Maggie's, you know, objectives are a little bit different than mine, but, you know, it's a difficult task to try to solve this, because it's a very, very complicated issue. I mean, everybody knows what the problem is, but coming up with solutions is really hard. And I think that's why everybody struggles with it so much.
Speaking of the Board of Supervisors property tax increase proposal, I guess it was passed, if I'm not mistaken, right? I mean, that's going to have a huge impact on, you know, affordable housing. And I just wonder, you know, what more we could do or what more input we could have, or how that may, you know, just in general change our work, because it seems like, you know, the Board of Supervisors property tax increase is a lot like a bond, just in terms of how much money it will raise for affordable housing. So it's just kind of a question more to the group. I mean, what do y'all think we should do in terms of more involvement or understanding, or, you know, how that will impact our work going forward, and, you know, maybe more in your subcommittee, Jim, but just our work in general as a commission.
Marcos, I hadn't heard that. Is that accurate, Marcos? Did it pass?
Yeah, the increased funding passed, but there will be no increase in the primary property tax next fiscal year. So it was funded out of other funds. For the additional money coming out next year for next fiscal year is not coming from an increase in the primary property tax rate. So that part was taken out, if I'm not mistaken. I think Sophia can elaborate.
Yeah, that's correct, actually. And let me send to Rachel, let me make a note of the final policy that was adopted. Yeah, you're right. It's like the county's tasked with coming up with that $250 million over 10 years without raising the primary property tax. So I don't know how it'll be done, but I'll send out the actual policy.
So what does that mean for next year?
Remains to be seen. So we'll see. I imagine, well, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I guess I imagine that the county administration is going to just have to find a way to drum up the money for each year.
That's a heavy lift.
Yeah.
They haven't figured out for next fiscal year where the money's coming from, the additional $3.5 million. So there'll be $8.5 million next fiscal year.
So, okay, so it's going from the 5 to 8.5?
Correct.
Yeah. So we're, there's 8.5 for this year instead of just the 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Megan.
It just seems like a pretty big deal. And I'm wondering again, like what, if anything, we can, should be doing or how we should be involved or, you know.
Yeah, that was going to be part of my update, actually, Jay, because we really want to invite y'all to come to our commission meetings, because that our commission will actually be, this year, Megan, that our commission will actually really be deciding like where these funds are going to be allocated. So, you know, whatever kind of, you know, input you want to have, you can come to the meetings for that. You can write letters to the commission. There's, you know, call to audience. And then we have some other presentations going on. We have working groups that are similar to y'all's subcommittees that have been doing like technical team work.
All right. While you're on this, can I just ask one more question? I'm sorry, Mindy, I know you raised your hand. So the housing supply study that you guys are working on, is that also something that you're going to be giving an update on?
Oh, yeah. Every single, well, I'm not going to give an update. I'll maybe give a little bit of an update today, but every single one of our meetings are going to have an update from them going forward till the end of their contract. So I can give an update on that, though. Yes.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I was curious on the timing and everything.
Mindy, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. When does the affordable housing subcommittee meet?
It should be on your agenda, and that will be. Subcommittee. Sorry, you're not talking to me.
That's okay. You can answer.
Are you talking about our subcommittee, or are you talking about the Pima County Affordable Housing Commission?
Our subcommittee that you need another person for.
Oh. We meet the third Wednesday of the month.
I have in the detailed agenda June 18th from 4 to 6.
Yeah.
Ooh. Jim, I'm interested in joining.
Who's that?
Me.
Mindy. Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Mindy.
I think before we move on, it sounds like we're pretty much done with the report outs. You know, one of the things that we have talked about, and HCD folks, if you could remind me, you know, we are going to have Southwest Decision Resources come back together with us at some point in the next few months, just to, you know, kind of regroup and make sure that we're on track and see, you know, what other kinds of facilitation they may be able to provide us. Did we come up with I don't think we settled on a particular meeting. What were the details of that? I don't know, Rachel or Allison, if you guys could refresh my memory.
I know we had discussed having Southwest Decision Resources back at the August meeting to give subcommittees 3 months to figure out these their action plans and then do further facilitation with them. I also just wanted to throw in here too, I think Ray was hoping to give a report out for the mobile housing task force before this item is done as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would definitely like to get Ray in on this agenda item. So that, thank you for reminding me. Does at this point, just kind of having had one subcommittee meeting, does August seem like a good meeting time for Southwest Decision Resources to meet with us again and see where we are and help us with any facilitation? Does that seem like a good month, a good meeting? Because obviously it's up to us. You know, we could do it September or, you know, sooner, but Yeah, go ahead, Joe. Did you see your hand?
I was waving goodbye to some of my office.
Oh,
sorry.
So I'm not hearing anybody really piping up here. So let's just say at this point we will have Southwest Decision Resources come to our August meeting, as I've discussed. And, you know, obviously if we get to July and want to change that, I think we can. But just to kind of have on your radar as a time when we can kind of regroup and see where we are with our subcommittee work and get any more facilitation if it's needed from Southwest Decision Resources. So with that, before we move on, Ray, I'd love to give you a chance to give your update. Take it away.
Thank you so much. So the Mobile Home Manufactured Housing, so the MH Task Force, has met twice. And is both a part of the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development, but expanding far beyond that and partnering with the Pima County Regional Affordable Housing Commission and also with a number of participants who are mobile home residents, people who are working in legal services, people from the health department, had really great turnout and participation. And in this last meeting, we looked at identifying, the first meeting, we were identifying some of the major issues. And then the second meeting, looking at kind of three big categories of issues that are facing people living in mobile and manufactured housing communities, including the barriers to weatherization and home repair assistance. Since, as many of you know, we've talked about in these meetings before, there's a high percentage of people who die of heat-related deaths in the state. Who die indoors are in manufactured housing. It's like 6 to 8 times more likely that someone who dies at home from a heat-related death is in manufactured housing. And for those who do die in their homes for a heat-related illness, that many of them have, when the medical examiner is making the report, find that their AC is not working or do not have AC or have non-functioning AC. So we're looking at wait times for that, heat repair options, barriers to applying for assistance. Also looking at, and that will continue to be a major part of this group, is really addressing those heat-related deaths. Looking at enforcement of the Mobile Home Park Landlord-Tenant Act, we're still finding that many mobile home park residents are being evicted with utility bills that are, in my opinion, at least, are clearly fraudulent. Like, I've done the math on some of them and looking at the meter readings, and it's like, that does not calculate to that amount. Some of the participants who were in the meeting who live in mobile manufactured homes have experienced that. They have been evicted for not paying exceptionally high bills that do not line up. So looking at building more relationships with the utility companies, have more accountability there. Supporting opportunities for park residents to become direct utility customers, more requirements on transparency for master meter parks who are centralizing their utility service and reselling it to the customer, to have transparency on that, to provide how much they're charging customers versus how much they're paying themselves, especially in terms of the actual quantity of the gallons or the kilowatts that are coming in and being charged for. A lack of responsiveness from the Department of Housing, or sometimes a weak response there. So looking at meeting with the Department of Housing and the governor's office and having a better understanding of what their power can be. There's also expressed the concern around not having enough time for getting access to legal counsel in the evictions proceedings. So some conversation around that as well. We'll be doing some research on what other states do for licensing mobile home parks. Arizona does not have a licensing process for operating mobile home parks, which is another factor that makes enforcement difficult, because they can't take away a license for a poorly run park. And also again, as we've talked about in meetings before, but that the Arizona Corporation Commission does not oversee the master metered utilities. So people who are in this position of being a utility customer of a mobile home park do not really have a place to go besides the Attorney General. And there were staff from the Attorney General's office in these last two meetings, and they have been supporting the enforcement, but wanting to have another layer of protection of a jurisdiction that, or that of a government agency that has it in their jurisdiction to actually oversee these utility services. Again, since that has been one of the major issues. So if anyone else is interested in joining, you're welcome to join. These meetings are open to the public. And certainly encouraging of all commission members. Our next meeting, which I think is in the agenda, will be on Zoom on June 26th at 1 p.m. The meetings are the fourth Thursday of the month. And I think we'll be continuing this conversation about policies to improve the protection of mobile home park residents. And I see Alan and then Jim's hand.
So thanks, Ray, for your presentation. That was good. I was at that meeting, as you recall, and a couple of things I wanted to mention as takeaways that struck me. I'm not fully up to speed on this, but I understand that mobile homes manufactured before 1976 they weren't manufactured any standards. There are some federal standards, I think HUD. I'm looking into this, trying to figure it out so I can get it straight, but 1976 seems to be a borderline, and ones manufactured before those are not built to standards. And there, this figure that was used by a professor from the U of A, whose name I don't recall, said 35% of mobile homes in our area, if that's the area, wherever he was defining, were built before 1976. So this is more than 50 years ago. These things are 50 plus years old, and people are still living in them. They weren't built to standards then. There's no way that they were built whenever they were built to last 50 years. They were built to last 10 years, and people still live in them. So this gentleman's notion was that they all need to be replaced. And we're talking about millions of dollars of cost to do that, and something that, to my way of thinking, is necessary. You talk about heat-related deaths. I don't know how many are in that sort of mobile home, but I would imagine a high percentage. I don't know how they can possibly be insulated, even if they have air conditioning. It really sounds atrocious. So that was one takeaway. I don't know where the money's going to come from to do that. It's a huge bill, but it does seem necessary. And the other thing is also significant, but not as costly, just struck me. And I think, Ray, this was a statistic you had, like a high percentage of people that are dying in mobile homes have working air conditioning. They just don't have them turned on. And my assumption is that's, and the percentage was over 30%, is that they can't afford it. So same thing, this is something that just screams for help to get people to turn on their air conditioning. If they need money for that, then figure that out. Because it's unacceptable that someone's dying because they don't turn their air conditioner on. That's all I have.
Thanks, Ray. Hey, are you, just a question for you, are you working with anybody at TEP on this issue?
We have met with TEP a number of times with Teresa Bravo, I think, as their government relations person. But if there are other people at TEP who would meet with us.
I've talked to a couple people over there, and they're aware of this problem. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the best solution is to individually meter mm-hmm. every unit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way it works for, you know, it's the most housing divisions, is you individually meter each unit. And then mm-hmm. there's, you don't have the landlord as an intermediary that is able to do
the cost various of doing things. That is the barrier.
What's that?
The cost of doing that is the barrier.
Do you know what that cost is?
I don't, but people at this meeting we went to made it sound like it's expensive, thousands of dollars, tens of thousands.
It can be pretty expensive. I think there was a law passed in the 80s that utility companies can't put in new master meters But for these older developments, so these are all parks that are pre-1980s, they have pre-1980s wiring. It's the trenching and retrenching the wiring. It's not the replacing the meter itself. It's the infrastructure there. Not that it's impossible to do. California has a program where they subsidize that cost. And I think that's something, maybe especially if this Pima County housing bond is, it's called a housing bond, the 3 cent sale, the 3 cent, not sales tax, the 3 cent property tax. I wonder if this could be something that might work into that, or some other area where there's some public subsidy to help support defraying some of that cost, so that property owners are incentivized to do this. Maybe the utility company themselves might help to spread that cost over over utility users, because many people in the manufactured homes do say they want to be direct utility customers. If you're a direct utility customer, you can get a low income discount, you can have all those other protections, you can have your power turned back on with reasonableness. You're protected just so much more deeply as a direct utility customer. But it's not, if it were just a matter of switching out meters, that's, I think, would be so easy to do, but it's that, that underground.
So they're saying that the wire that's currently in place does not meet their current codes, so it has to be replaced.
I think it likely wouldn't. And again, having more of the technical staff at TEP be a part of those conversations, I think would be really helpful. Having more manufactured home owners, park owners, be a part of that conversation too, because I think it might be a park by park. How old is their wiring? What would it take to make that conversion happen? I think it's also part of the case for having more resident-owned communities. I know if the price grant money really does come, that some of that will be funding converting at least one manufactured housing community into resident-owned. And when the residents own it, you can have such a different conversation about making that in public investment into a long-term infrastructure improvement.
I was gonna ask you, Ray, that it's who bears that cost? It's the park owners, correct?
Of converting? Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the park owners, but also the residents, are the ones who pay for everything. So I have to imagine the residents will be paying for that too, which is where I think if any kind of public subsidy is going in, you really need to also put protections of, you can't like give a huge public subsidy and then allow them to charge whatever they want in rent.
Well, I would think that, that could it be an opportunity to bolster some affordable rental in some way.
And those could be great. I don't want to take up too much time here. I know we have lots of other things on the agenda, but anyone who wants to continue this conversation, we could have it on June 26th at 1 p.m. on Zoom. And feel free to contact me in between then, too. I'm happy to be in conversation about it.
We're actually pretty good on time. The next agenda item theoretically would be at 5:05 if we were really tracking by the minute. So if you guys want to keep going for a little bit, we certainly have time. If not, we can move on as well. Any more updates, Ray, about the mobile home task force, or are you good?
Yeah, I think those were the main updates. I think, people have other ideas of, I guess, as we're looking at the funding from the city of Tucson. We're talking about later in the agenda is the housing trust fund funds, of just keeping in a lens towards whether or not some of that can also be used for protecting manufactured housing residents, recognizing that it is such a large percentage of our affordable housing in the city. So we want that taken into consideration. Thank you.
Go ahead, Marianne.
Ray, how does the Christ grant fit into what you're doing? Because I that's a lot of money that was supposed to go toward the upgrades, you know, and the utility efficiency.
Yeah, so the Price Grant, and other people on this call may be able to jump in on this as well. The Price Grant will be supporting some eviction prevention. We'll be doing some significant weatherization and at times even full replacement of some of those pre-1976 homes, as well as conversion of a park to a resident-owned community. So it wouldn't make those other system-wide change of, you know, moving over everyone to direct utility customers. I see, Andrew, you went off mute, and if you want to share more about that or if anyone else wants to hop on.
Oh, thanks, Ray. Ray's exactly right. The Price Grant itself had activities that were written into the grant last year. And so those proposed activities are kind of locked in once the grant was awarded. So Ray enumerated, you know, many of them. And then, you know, additionally, there are funds in the grant for the EELS, Eviction Loss Prevention Program, that Sophia, I think, mentioned earlier in the meeting today, as well as some funds for outreach and education amongst the mobile home resident community to kind of let them know about the program, as well as about their rights as mobile home tenants under the Landlord-Tenant Act and other protections.
All right, anything else before we move on to the next agenda item? Okay, up next is Housing Alternative for Urban Strength, House, and that is Anne. Take it away.
Thanks, Jay. And I will say Ben Bueller-Garcia is, I do see evidence that he's here. Ben, feel free to jump in as well. But my understanding is Ben at the last meeting mentioned the House program. And then shortly thereafter, we did discuss this program at Mayor and Council. That was in early May. And so House is a program that has been proposed by Council Member Cunningham. And so House stands for Housing Alternatives for Urban Strength. I'm gonna put a memo in the chat. This is the Mayor and Council memorandum from that study session item. And so just to give sort of an overview, and I'll try to answer questions. I did invite Ward 2 to attend today. So the idea is we know, particularly in some of the current shelters, for instance, Sophia mentioned the EELS program, working with them on the shelter, the what used to be Knights Inn, now the Craycroft shelter. We do know that there are people that are currently in our shelters who do have an income, but are still hard to house, to get rental housing due to issues such as they don't have the security deposit. They don't have first month, last month, and security deposit, but they make enough to be able to pay a monthly payment. In some cases, they may have a bad credit history. In other cases, they may have a criminal history. And so the way I understand it, Councilmember Cunningham is really hoping that the city adopts, the city supports. It doesn't necessarily have to be the city that executes it, but the city do a pilot program to really try to make it easier for those folks to house them. So these would be people who don't have other housing assistance. The goal is to really try to expand options, not supplement, not supplant options. And so the thinking is the city would provide funding to those folks to help with the moving costs. So that security deposit, first month, last month, including some of the rental insurance and some additional costs, really to try to make sure both they're protected and the landlord's protected. And then also part of the goal here, and I'll talk about this a little more in the Housing Trust Fund item, is also to have a risk mitigation or a damages pool in case, to really encourage landlords to work with this program. So really, in case that there is damage to apartments, essentially the city or is funding from the city would help to backstop. And so there's elements of this that other communities are doing, but that is the way in which Council Member Cunningham had proposed. As I mentioned, there is not yet certainty in terms of whether the city would administer or if we would try to work with a partner. There are a few things to work out, such as depending on how exactly it's laid out, depending on the funding source that's used, there are some legal obstacles to get over. But we do know in some cases, similar type programs have worked. I think the other thing, the memo lays out some of this, that the city feels strongly in terms of supporting the pilot is really for the families, for the households that participate, making sure they are offered case management and sort of supportive services as part of this program. Ben, what do you think anything I missed there?
No, I think you covered it really well. And just to emphasize, this will be a completely voluntary program on behalf of the private sector, multifamily housing managers and owners. There is one, and the AMA, representatives of the AMA have talked with Councilmember Cunningham and the city staff about this. Excuse me. One thing we just can't get around is going to be the criminal background check, because we can't have separate standards for different tenants without violating the fair housing laws. So I think that still needs to be worked out as far as who will set, whether the individual apartment will forward that threshold to the city, and they'd evaluate the potential tenant based on that. And the other thing that maybe some of you can help with is Councilmember Cunningham feels very strongly that everybody who applies for this program needs to go through some kind of a good tenant curriculum. So we're looking, if anybody knows if there's like a, you know, just copy and paste curriculum out there somewhere else in the country that works, well, we'd be happy to see if we can get our hands on that.
Yeah, and so I'm happy to take questions in a sec. Thank you, Ben. So during the study session, we talked through the motion was that housing community development would return in approximately 90 days with sort of a more flushed out way in which this program could be implemented. So happy if you all have suggestions in terms of what you would want to see. I mentioned, so there isn't necessarily funding identified in the city budget for this. It's not a ton of money in terms of a pilot. And so you'll see when I talk about the Housing Trust Fund, I am adding as a potential consideration for the existing money, some money towards this program. Total to do a pilot, we're thinking it would be about $100,000. And really thinking that it won't cost $100,000, because that's sort of worst case scenario. If everyone ends up creating damages and we have to pay out the landlords and sort of all the pieces. So really thinking that's the maximum it would cost for a year to do this pilot, and really think that that's more than is what will be needed for the year to do this pilot.
And if I could just add one other thing too, an element of the program as originally proposed by Councilmember Cunningham would also have a fund set aside that in case the tenant breaks the lease early, the landlord would be made whole.
Questions? Marianne?
Yep. So in the past, when we've worked with jurisdictions that have provided, have said they would provide help with damages, the paperwork and the process and the time it took to get that was more costly to us. than, you know, doing it. And so I just to consider that, you know, you want for landlords to not have to go through brain damage in order to get their damages covered. So that's one thing. And the other thing is for this population that doesn't have any other sorts of help financially getting in, they also probably have evictions, and their and the costs on those evictions have, you know, can be, we just worked with somebody who had $27,000, you know, in evictions. So I, that's something to consider, because to get somebody into an apartment, some, they're not going to get them, let them in with evictions on their background if they haven't been, if there's a balance that's due. And the other thing that happened with the funding for damages was, after all the work to put in for damages, we found out that because we were funded federally for on the property, that we couldn't get them. So I think just thinking through all of that would be my suggestions.
Thanks, Marianne. Mindy?
Thank you, Jay. It's a bit lengthy. I watched the study session in its pretty much entirety, and there were a couple of thoughts that I had that were not included in the presentation from Councilperson Gunning. One is that we know that when people start working, they become tax-paying entity citizens. So that's one of the gains that we get by getting our unhoused, unemployed individuals working as that tax back into community. There was a program that I had, a loan program that I had started with Community Foundation of Southern Arizona to loan first. And I don't know if this would fit into the legal structure of what is being proposed. We had a loan, non-enforceable payback for people's first month, last month, utilities and pet deposits. And 7 out of the 10 people paid their loan back, or paid the money back for their first, second, for that to move, that moving into their own apartment or fund. They had to do that. I think that might be interesting. Another question that I had is, who's going to provide the care management and wraparound supports for individuals going into apartments? And another last one is, I did some quick calculations. I saw someplace that it costs about $53,000 a year for the community to assist unhoused citizens in terms of first responders, ERs, jail, prison, cleanup, damage. And I multiply that times 40, which is the number that was thrown out as for the pilot, 40 individuals. That's $2,120,000 that would be theoretically saved out of the city budget if this were to go forward. Also understand that Access has a new code, and I haven't been able to find it, that Access has a new code that pays for housing for people. Does anybody know about that? Yeah. So
they did, the main woman who's running that new Access program, just as a reminder, she did give a presentation to the commission probably about 9 months ago about that very program. Rachel, I'm sure we can find a link and send it out as a reminder. And just as our Housing First program is participating with access on that program.
Yay. So it's the yay. So those were a couple of thoughts that came up for me after watching the study session. And you were great and articulate, and really happy that this idea is moving. Hopefully it will move forward. One of my last thoughts is that there was that ask about the $320,000 that is in the housing trust fund that we were asked how to allocate that. And I think that this kind of pilot.
Well, we will talk about that later on this agenda.
I figured as much. Okay, those are my thoughts about the house. I'm very excited. I'm very proud. Yeah.
And you know, you had asked who would be doing the case management. So really interested if anyone here does have input on sort of what would you all recommend in terms of, my task is to go back to mayor and council in now approximately 60 days. And so if you all, any of you have thoughts on who should administer the program and also things like case management and services, we just feel it's important that that be included as part of this pilot program.
So there's a program called peer support training that is happening throughout behavioral health and substance use disorder programs. They go through a very rigorous training program as peer support specialists that I've often thought adding another segment about unhoused individuals to broaden that perspective of peer support specialists. My feeling is that it would be people who have lived experience involved in managing the care. And I know a couple of agencies that would be awesome. That's all I'm going to say about that, as Forrest Gump would say.
Thanks, Mindy. If there's no objection, I would like to move on from House. Obviously, if there's any more, we can talk about it. But I just wanted to give Sophia a chance to give her update. I believe she was going to update us towards the end of the meeting, but I see she has to leave in 5 minutes. So without objection, I'd like to turn it over to Sophia.
Okay, thank you for not objecting. And thank you, Jay, for putting me a little bit ahead. So I think we already kind of talked about the additional money for affordable housing that's going to start, you know, kicking in and speeding up right now. And then we have the $8.5 million for affordable housing this year, focusing on building more and keeping people housed. Our Affordable Housing Commission is going to be having a lot to say about that. I really encourage y'all to come to the next meeting, especially because we're going to have it at our brand new Northwest Service Center. It's beautiful. It's where the Golden Pin Lanes was. And because of history, they have to still have the sign with the bowling pins and stuff. So it's really great. So I hope you all can come. If you can't make it, we also have a link to join on Teams. But that's going to be June 20th at 8:30 a.m. And we'll be talking a lot about like what's going to happen with that $8.5 million. We're also going to have, because I wanted to address Jim's question about the updates, we're also going to have updates very regularly going forward. We're going to have memos that come out monthly or more frequently on what the Echo Northwest study, what they're doing, what they found. Like we have spatial demand profiles and displacement analysis and just the different typologies of houses they're putting together along with that housing needs assessment. So they'll be giving an update at all of the regional Affordable Housing Commission meetings, and we'll be sending out memos as well with any slides they have. So those will be going to the county administrator as well. So those are all going to be either on our Housing Commission website or the county administrator memoranda. Let's see, what else can I say about the study at this time? So they're jamming on it. We've asked them to kind of speed up the timeline since like what Nicole presented last time with our strategic planning to put together something with the commission. We're doing presentations on all the different pieces to put together. Sorry, I'm trying not to go on too long. And then there was one more thing I wanted to say. Echo Northwest is going to have a road show. So they'll be, you know, showing off those typologies and just like presenting, educating the public on different things. And that'll be in October. So we'll have more updates about that as we go. But we are going to have, hopefully by November, we'll have all of our recommendations and strategies from them and from our housing commission. And that is all I have for tonight.
Marianne, you had a question or a comment?
Thanks, Sophia. So you're thinking you guys are going to be done with this in November of 2025?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's we're kind of pushing up our schedule a little bit. We're actually hoping to have it before that, but I don't want to like overpromise. So we should have that, and then we'll be sharing out all of that good stuff. Very exciting.
So I know Pima County and the city received $7 million from HUD to reduce regulatory and financing barriers to producing and preserving affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, maybe Ann can chime in on this too, can you just tell us a little bit more about that and what's going on with it?
Sure. I'll have to defer to Ann on like where HUD is at with that. I can say for our part with our portion of the grant, we're going to be looking at impact fee subsidies for developers, and we're going to be, we said we're going to be doing some gap funding, so we'll be doing that. And I think just another thing is just studying where we can ease up on zoning and where we can ease up on permitting and like just all of the things that will help our developers build more. So that's what we're doing. And then Anne, I don't know what HUD's, what's going on with HUD.
Nor do I. No, we are waiting for a revision. So if you recall, these awards were made under a different administration. So our next step is to upload an action plan into the HUD system, but they are not willing to do that until we sign a grant amendment. And so we are waiting for that grant amendment now, but hopefully we'll be able to get moving on the grant soon.
So the grant amendment is actually coming from HUD. Okay. Good luck with that. And then the other question I had was the decade, the next decade of funding from through Pima County. So does that translate to $85 million over the next 10 years?
It should be translating to more than that. But I will see what I need to do is get you guys that final policy to make sure that I have all of the right numbers.
Okay. Could you? That'd be great.
As soon as we get that, as soon as we get that executed policy, then I will send that out. We'll probably send that out to our commission too, but I have a note for that.
So I don't know if anybody used the Federal Home Loan Bank of San Francisco to apply for anything this last year, but I've been on the commission there for the AHP, and a lot of points, more points were given to Arizona, getting to be able to represent Southern Arizona and give them this kind of information that makes them more interested in partnering with Arizona projects and Southern Arizona projects. So I'm supposed to be there next week. So if any way we could get that number from you or close to it, I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Sophia.
Thanks, Marianne. I believe that's it for Sophia. Yeah, she's got to hop off. Thanks, Sophia. Let's see. So we gave Anne a brief intermission, but now Anne is back to talk about the housing trust fund.
All right. Thanks, Jay. I did put together a presentation mostly to organize my thoughts. And then also Rachel included in Ural's agenda a draft, and you'll hear me talk about this a lot, document related to the housing trust fund, which really is intended to help guide a discussion with you all. I'm going to share my screen and go through a presentation mostly just to make sure I say what it's a very say what I'm thinking in terms of the trust fund, and feel free as I go along to ask questions. And of course, now my screen is a little bit weird. Okay. So, just as a reminder how we got here. I'm going to talk about the trust fund and in particular, talk a little bit about guidelines and then scenarios for the existing funding that is there. So as a reminder, I gave a presentation before. I'm not going to re-give the presentation, but I did want to just level set if folks weren't here. So housing trust funds, by and large, are established sources of funding created by governments. They support different activities related to housing. Sometimes in some cities, they're exclusively for housing developments. In other cities, they may be more for services and other types of programs. Usually they have a dedicated recurring revenue source. And a lot of these exist at different levels of government. And so City of Tucson created a housing trust fund in 2006. Again, I went through this presentation. I shared with you a table of exactly what was spent and how much was spent when it was created in 2006. But these were the categories that where some of the funding that there was 2006 to about 2009. These were the main categories. I see Marcos is here. I'm sure he remembers the housing trust fund. And so what ended up happening, and I let you all know this before, is during the recession, really any of the funding that was available for the housing trust fund ended up getting diverted to meeting sort of basic needs in the city budget. And so there hasn't really been intentional investment related to the housing trust fund component since. And so as the housing affordability strategy for Tucson was adopted, there was a specific action item to reinstate the housing trust fund. And of course, the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development in 2022, in a list of recommendations to mayor and council, said, hey, reinstate the city's housing trust fund. So that's all background. And then most recently in February, so there's a little bit of money in the housing trust fund today, and also I'll say HCD wasn't comfortable recommending spending it because there wasn't really the mechanism in place to spend any of that money. So in February of this year, mayor and council voted to really have the commission be the main guiding entity advising them on the housing trust fund. Back when it was created, there was a committee specifically designed to oversee the housing trust fund monies. That committee has since dissolved. And so in February, Mayor and Council made it really clear that it is, they want some entity overseeing the funding and the spending. And so there was an ordinance adopted. The first three bullets of this, what the role is, were taken straight from the ordinance. So one is to review the goals and priorities of the Tucson Housing Trust Fund and make recommendations to mayor and council. Two, provide advice relating to the goals and policies of the Housing Trust Fund. Three, promote resource development and funding alternatives for the Housing Trust Fund. And four, I added this at the study session table, and they did make a motion to have the commission provide recommendations on the existing funding that's in there now. And so, hence, you know, they talk about reviewing the goals and the guidelines, and I felt like, well, you can't review something you don't have. And so we drafted, and I'll give Sarah Megason a lot of credit. She put together thoughts in a document in terms of really making sure there is some structure. And so here are my thoughts, and very, very open to input here. One is, I'm calling this a draft McDraft. So I don't really feel like you need to finalize any of this today now, and we can sort of talk about that, but really open to ideas. You as the commission are being asked to give advice and weigh in here. I will say, in particular, as you go through the funding scenarios that I'm throwing out for consideration, that would also have to be vetted by the city attorney's office. So for instance, I do talk about potentially having some of that money now go to the House initiative, and that would need to be vetted. I mentioned the attorney's office has concerns about some of the activities, depending on how it's administered, depending on what funding is given. Three, I'm not gonna read the whole thing. You all have it now, but there is information, sort of a background section on guiding plans and data and really some of the higher level goals. So that's in there. I would say for you all who think about housing a lot, it's nothing you haven't heard before, but we really wanted to have it documented in terms of why this housing trust fund is important. So as I mentioned, the ordinance and talks about guidelines and just really sort of infrastructure to support the housing trust fund. I think Sarah Megason did a good job of drafting it for an eye for the future. So really trying to create this infrastructure, but also recognizing there's not that much money in there now. And so these guidelines can change too, but really wanted to at least have sort of an idea of how and why, what activities it makes sense for the funding to support. And so let's say you all decide how you want to recommend to mayor and council they spend what's in there now. Should there be a dedicated funding source in the future? The thinking is really similar to Pima County. And I will say, I don't know if Sophia is still here, such kudos to Pima County for passing what they passed. Really appreciate that they really are emerging as a leader in this space, and you know, committing $8.5 million to next year and then $250 million over the next 10 years is pretty incredible. So should there be additional funding in the future as part of the trust fund, the thinking is there would be a sort of annual proposal and an input for you all to say on an annual basis what the funding should go to. For now, HCD has identified sort of three categories of spending based on what we've seen the need is via in 2025 based on the data. And again, this is all for you all to give input on. And then for each of the three categories of spending, there in the document talks about the goal of that category, what are eligible activities within it, target populations to prioritize, how the implementation can or should work, and then metrics for success. And so I'm going to quickly walk through these three activities. Activity one is really focused on affordable housing development funding. In your memo to Mayor and Council in 2022, you specifically mentioned gap funding as sort of a key need. And so that's really the first is focused on development funding for affordable multifamily, but also could be for single family home ownership. We did put in there, knowing the continuum of housing and based on the gaps analysis that Keith Bentley gave, talking about how much units are needed to end homelessness, related to emergency shelter, transitional shelter, permanent supportive housing. And then we know from the Echo Northwest study how many units are needed of additional units. So the thinking is the funding potentially could support activities across the housing continuum. And so here are some other types of expenses related to development that the thinking is in the future this funding could go towards. Second category, home ownership support. We've heard from you all thinking about equity and thinking about the need to help build wealth. So really wanted to also have a category for the future in terms of what this could be spent. So including down payment and closing cost assistance. And so activities that really would support more affordable home ownership in our community. And then three is sort of more of what I've been hearing from you all and sort of this current emergent need, really having there be rental housing support. And so those types of activities could include emergency rental assistance, subsidies to support households who have barriers. So a lot of the elements of the house program, funding for landlord-tenant mediation, eviction prevention, potentially could be grants for energy efficiency and weatherization, property owner and housing provider capacity and support billing, and supportive services. I continue to feel like with housing insecure folks, one of the biggest needs we have in our community is more case management and supportive services. And so, so those are sort of what I'm thinking, what this document lays out in terms of buckets for funding to provide some infrastructure to guide now, but really to set this up for the future. Absolutely happy to take feedback on it. And I do think that feedback can come in a few different ways. That doesn't need to be figured out anytime too soon, because we don't know what the funding is going to look like for the future. But if the commission is interested in having a particular working group work on it, one of the subcommittees, or create a working group, I think there's ways to provide feedback to help flush this out to recommend to mayor and council. What I think is more urgent is, because there is money now, you heard from Ward 3 last time, really interest in using what's there now to support work happening now. It's not a lot of money, and it's not no money, and don't want to discount any money might prevent somebody from being evicted, and that's really meaningful. But when we're talking about gap funding, and usually depending on the project, you need at least $500,000 of gap funding, and there's only $320,000 in there, just being mindful that it's not enough money to build an affordable housing development. So right now, there is not a recurring sustainable funding source for the future. As a reminder, what you say, and you can today, if you have recommendations that's like, oh, we want to get some of this money out now, you can absolutely make that recommendation. One thing to keep in mind, at any point, you can send a memorandum to mayor and council. I can converse with them, but just as a heads up, should you want to flush this out more, and the mayor and council aren't meeting in July, so just a FYI there. So in developing different scenarios, we sort of thought about, with $320,000, what could be meaningful, and recognizing this is sort of really only a potentially one year thing. So option A was really thinking about what the community need is now and potentially helping some people hopefully not get evicted now, and get support now to get into housing. Option B is really thinking about laying the infrastructure, and I'll talk about this a little more in a moment, for sort of a longer term program to potentially help make a bigger impact down the line. Option C is sort of a hybrid of the different things we've been hearing, but really do want to hear if we're on the right track. And then option D, I figured I'd remind you, as the commission, you could choose your own adventure and recommend what you want to recommend. And so scenarios, and again, I really want you all to give input here, but so A was really focused on meeting community needs now. So putting a lot of the money towards emergency rental assistance. Now, I did want to point out, I know Ward 3 came at the last meeting. So when we did our People Communities Homes Investment Plan, there were a lot of requests for emergency rental assistance from a lot of organizations. We did fund community safety, health, and wellness. We did fund them at $50,000 to do emergency rental assistance. I do, and Ray, feel free to jump in here. We did fund Podos Movale, I forget the name of the organization. Ray's not coming off mute. Poder Casas Mobiles?
I think that's right.
Okay. They did receive some funding for eviction prevention and really supporting people in manufactured homes via the PCHIP process. And then the Pima Council on Aging received a little bit of emergency rental assistance. So there is some money going out. It is woefully inadequate to meet the need in the community. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. And so option A is some money towards rental assistance and prevention, thinking about the house program and sort of some of the needs that were laid out there. Some money for really thinking about that case management and supportive services, which aren't cheap, but are so important, and it's hard to find other funding sources to deliver those. And then some money in terms of tenant outreach, education, et cetera. B is thinking about, and this might make sense to have a future presentation on the Maricopa County Threshold Program. Ben, feel free to jump in. I know that this came up when we talked about with the Multifamily Housing Association. So for those that aren't aware, and I did put a little blurb in the document about Threshold. So one of the things that Tucson Pima Collaboration to End Homelessness has been talking about, and I'll say I've seen this as a real need and have been really looking at how successful this program has been in Phoenix. There is a program in Phoenix that is a centralized landlord engagement and liaison service program, which really is saying we can't build fast enough to really make sure folks who are having a tough time obtaining housing get housing. So it's really trying to work with existing landlords who have existing units to make them available to folks with rental assistance. And so Home Inc., if you're familiar with that organization, they administer the program. And it's really, there is the way the program works, there is a really user-friendly landlord portal that really helps advertise vacant units. I've heard from numerous people how helpful having that up-to-date landlord portal is. It also, like House, a big piece of it is there's incentives for the landlord in terms of incentives to work with folks, incentives to help the people moving in with move-in costs. And then there is what they call a risk mitigation pool of money. And so since they've been operating in Maricopa, they've added 620 new landlords that take rental assistance programs in the community. And those 620 landlords operate over 1,200 properties, and they've reduced housing search times by 29 days. So by all accounts, it's been a really successful program in the Valley. If you're interested in learning more about that, we can have them come at a future meeting to really share how and why they feel like they've been as successful as they have been. Option C is sort of a hybrid version of all of these things. There's $320,000. Can we throw can we divide it into some of these different options? And then D would be the choose your own adventure if you all have priorities or things that you feel like you should recommend to mayor and council. last thing I'll say, and I see questions. Some of you in the document, I have heard from some of you, and technically in the ordinance, you are being asked to think about the future and how to sustain the housing trust fund. So some of you have asked me, how do other cities, how do they sustain their housing trust fund? So there is information in the document how some other cities do that. Okay. I'm done, and we'll let you all ask questions and give thoughts.
Alan?
Thanks. That was a great presentation. Thanks, Anne, for all that. I do have some ideas. I don't know if this is the right place to do it. We have kind of limited time to talk about. This seems like a whole meeting. We could go for 2 hours on this one topic. But just to mention my thoughts, one thing is I was struck by the suggestion in eligible activities for a soft second mortgage for 10 to 15 years. My concern there is that when the inevitable default happens, is the trust fund going to foreclose on someone's house and make them homeless? That just seems not appropriate. So that's, I'm not asking for an answer to that question. I'm just making sure that's on someone's radar. And then given that I'm an eviction defense lawyer and concerned about having people get eviction defense, my focus would be what I'm going to call right to counsel, so that there would be funding for everybody who is charged with a possible eviction case to get a lawyer. It's a huge benefit. The outcome from eviction cases that have lawyers versus ones that don't is dramatically different. I think I couldn't find it while you were talking, but I think I read a 13-fold increase in successful outcome is by having a lawyer. It's very dramatic. It's completely different, and it's really urgently necessary. And I think that would be a great use of this money. It might fit in one of your categories. I think maybe category A. It doesn't matter where you shoehorn it in. I'm just throwing that out there as something that I think is really necessary. There are some municipalities that have this. I think even maybe some states. I think Washington State has it. There is a national movement to do this, and Tucson can get on that movement. And I think it's something that's really, it's really necessary, in my opinion.
Thanks, Alan. Jim?
And thanks for the presentation. Couple of just a quick kind of housekeeping things. The link in the agenda goes to a YouTube video, not to your presentation. And there was a lot of good stuff in there. I think that's going to require some more thought and discussion. It's going to be really like next to impossible for us to obtain any sort of consensus today on how to move forward. I would like to be involved in the process, and we can either do it through the housing options subcommittee, or if we want to set up an ad hoc subcommittee, either one's fine with me, but this is something that that I'm obviously passionate about and I've talked about for some time. Just as a kind of a taking it up a level, 2 weeks ago, I met with, I'm spacing his name. Hang on. Senators Peterson and Shoup. Senator Peterson is the chair of the Arizona State Senate. And we were talking about budgets and whatnot. We talked a little bit about the State Housing Trust Fund. Something he shared with me is, so as you guys know, the State Housing Trust Fund was basically wiped this last year. It went from 150 million down to 15. And they were projecting a pretty significant budget deficit at the state level. They are now projecting a $450 million surplus for the state of Arizona. And what he said was that they're probably going to split up that money where $150 million will go to the House, $150 million will go to the Senate, and $150 million will go to the governor to decide priorities on where that money gets spent. So there's, his perspective was that the State Housing Trust Fund is going to get some funding back. I don't know how much, but that was, I thought that was good news, you know, but more and more, I think you know, to fill that gap, funding is going to be required to be happen at a local level, so the cities and the counties. So the fact that the city is looking at doing this, I think, is really encouraging. You know, on a side note, I have heard from several out-of-state developers who are looking at Tucson again, specifically because of what the county is looking at doing. And if the city is able to do something as well, I do think we're going to start attracting more people here to start looking at doing some projects, which is good. So that's it. I don't know that I, you know, there's a lot there with those three options. I guess the only question I have for you, Anne, is from a timing perspective, when do we need to have some sort of a recommendation pulled together?
And so that's where, in I would say, whenever you're ready, if you, I do know there is a sense of urgency in terms of what's there now, if it can help prevent people from getting evicted. And another consideration is mayor and council aren't meeting in July. And so I think that if you have recommendations kind of more in the August timeframe, and like I said, if you're interested in saying, well, geez, we should put some of this money to action now to make sure people don't get evicted, really up to you in terms of what that recommendation is, when it is. And I think longer term, the document that provides more guidance for the overall trust fund can come later.
So in terms of how we pull together consensus on this, because I think it's going to be, that's going to be a difficult task. I guess my recommendation to you is let's maybe establish an ad hoc committee to look at this. We can ask for volunteers, and then, you know, we'll need to, it's going to either be one or two meetings, I'm guessing, with potentially a couple of presentations, kind of drill down and then come back to the commission with a recommendation.
I was just going to jump in. I think that sounds like a great idea, Jim, because there's a lot to digest and, you know, a lot to deal with here. I just want to do a quick time check. Obviously, it's 5:49. We don't have a ton left. The next agenda item, two of the four things are already, we've already taken care of. And then I don't think we need much time for next steps. So just want to make everybody aware of, you know, try and keep it brief and so we can get out of here on time. And with that, I'll go with, I don't know who was first, but I see Kenny.
I think Kenny was first and then Ray. Ben's been up.
Go ahead, Kenny.
Thanks for the presentation. Just really excited that we've got, you know, these pieces moving. I guess I had a few questions. Is there anything besides just the urgency of housing support? Is there anything that the funds need to be spent within a year? My concern or my hope is that we could figure out something to sustain or set up some of the explore program design. So the funds that are used could be more revolving or replenished, have some type of way, perhaps through the house program that you were mentioning, that, you know, it wouldn't just be out and gone, just to make sure we think through some kind of mechanism for the future. And then I was wondering how this might intersect with the PCHIP grant funding, if that would be a completely separate call. And if in the third piece was for the eligible activities, how strict those would need to be within guidelines? Would there be room for new programs to be proposed, such as the house one? You know, how strict those definitions would have to be?
So, great questions, Kenny. And I would say overall, in terms of that, would it have to be spent this year? No. Right now, your job is to recommend to mayor and council how you think it should be spent. And so if you feel like it may take longer, up to the commission. And then same with the other elements, really feel like this, we wanted to at least give you something to chew on and think about, but really the commission can sort of form what they think makes the most sense to recommend to mayor and council.
Right.
Thank you so much for the time you put into this presentation. Alan, I appreciated your comment there about eviction defense and such. And one of my thoughts on this is just ensuring that we're coupling funding that we're spending also with ensuring that that funding makes the most impact and continuing to make recommendations as a commission to do things to make that more cost effective, like advocating to extend the time for eviction proceedings to happen, ensuring that the EELS number is on the eviction notice so that people have a little bit more time to receive those services, like really looking at those very low cost things that can make a difference to make those funds go further and to have a huge impact too that would be lasting beyond the funding itself. And I'd love to be on the subcommittee if there's a subcommittee.
Thanks, Ray. Mindy? Mindy?
Thank you. I would like to be on that subcommittee as well. And because it's difficult to absorb all of this on the computer and reading and hearing. I don't work well. I know I've read so much about people needing just $300 or $100 to keep them from being evicted. And I'm wondering if, if there's an agency that does provide funding to keep people in there. I would be absolutely supportive of sending some money now to intervene on people's behalf so they do not enter into homelessness, some preventative money. We don't have time to go through all of this. A reminder, I think, that I want to bring to the commission, having worked in indigent behavioral health care for 38 years, we never had this kind of issue before. And that the city, I see the city trying to remedy what issues that the state ultimately has the responsibility to be ensuring that our citizens are safe and provided services and housing. So I appreciate the city doing this. And I want to remind us that this is a state liability, not a, but thank you, city, for standing, for showing up. That's all I have. Anything that we can do, you tell me and I will say yes, so we can help people now.
Thanks, Mindy. Al?
Just a quick comment. I would want to be on that subcommittee also.
Thank you. Before we kind of wrap this up, I have a couple of thoughts as well. I would really love to have this money go towards at least one pilot program so that we can understand and study what it is that we're trying to do. I mean, you know, it can be so much more complicated to, get money out the door and have it be effective. So I guess I'm a little bit concerned about money just kind of going here and there and being kind of scattered about and maybe not having as much impact as it otherwise could. And then I'd love to see, once, we look back and see, how a pilot program worked, make any improvements and then see if it can be scaled. Again, the amount of money we're talking about is not huge, but and obviously if we scaled up a program, that would entail more money going into the housing trust fund. So I think, figuring out how to get a revenue stream, a regular stream of money in there that's, being replenished every year is going to be critical, or else, it's just kind of like, well, then let's just get the money out now because there's a lot of need. But if we can, study a program, but put a program together, study it, scale it up, and then get more money in the fund. That's really what I think I would like to see. And then in order to get an ad hoc committee together, I'm just going to do this. And if it's not the right thing to do, then somebody can tell me. But I'd like to make a motion to create an ad hoc committee to study what to do and make a recommendation about what to do with the money in the housing trust fund.
Right.
Second. Mindy and Jim, I think you need to fight it out for who seconded that motion.
I don't need whoever seconded it.
Mindy can take that one.
All right. We got a second from Mindy. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. So we have an ad hoc subcommittee created. I think, Jim, you can probably take it from here and get the group together. I don't know if there's any other direction that you need or you're good to go.
Let's go through the names again. I'll send an email out. So Mindy, Ray, who else?
I heard Kenny, Alan, and you.
Kenny, Alan.
And Mindy and Ray.
I don't have Alan's in email.
And we can HCD can help in terms of help you coordinate, Jim.
Okay.
And the one thing I'll say is, you know, we'll send the document out again to everyone. We'll send this presentation out to everyone. And I would say before we meet, if you can try to provide feedback to us that we can compile and get out, that might help.
Yeah.
Conversation.
I think it'd also be good if we met in person, just as I think the meetings tend to be more efficient if we could do an in-person meeting.
Agreed.
So,
Jim, I put my email in the chat if you can see that.
Okay. I think I'd like to be included as well, Jim, but I'm also aware that we might be getting close to a like full meeting quorum, so I don't know if that's an issue, but if it's not, I'd like to be on that as well.
That'd be great, Jay.
Keeping track of time, I think we need to move on to the final few agenda items if there's nothing else that's urgent now that we've got a ad hoc group to deal with this issue. All right, moving on to the next item, we've got some updates. So we got the Pima County update from Sophia, and we got the mobile home working group update from Ray. So I think that leaves HCD and PDSD.
I don't think anyone from PDSD is here, but I will keep this short, but did want to give a couple updates related to the commission itself. So one update, and you, Marianne, had put that update in the chat that she does plan on stepping off. I think, Marianne, and feel free to jump in, you mentioned July would be your last meeting. Might be nice to try to meet in person and do a nice little thing for Marianne, just throwing that out there. Two is that I did meet with the new head of Pima Council on Aging, Robert Ojeda. He is interested in serving. They do have a seat. PCOA has a seat. He's interested. So hopefully we'll get him all sworn in and ready to vote by the next meeting.
Awesome.
And then, and so I will work on the Marianne seat is for a local developer. So I will work on, and it's appointed by the housing community director. So I will work on trying to get an appointment there. There are two other vacancies, and Rachel's done a good job advertising the application out. And so we're going to close that soon and ask mayor and council to appoint two people. And so I wanted to just do one more final call. If you know anyone that you feel like might be interested in serving on the commission, we're going to close. Do we have a date, Rachel, Allison, that we're going to sort of send the information on to mayor and council, who are the ultimate appointers for that? But I'm hoping to do that soon. There's some good names on the list already. And so really hoping to fill the seats to help you all with the work you're doing. Any questions on that? I see Mindy raised her hand.
Thank you. Marianne, I was going to suggest whoever takes Marianne's position be appointed to the commission, because they'll be the new director. And she, Marianne, just put in Megan Headings. Is that your new successor?
Oh, no. I recommend Megan Headings.
Right.
For a developer seat on the commission. That's who I'm
Megan was here, but she's not here now to to speak for herself, but she was here earlier, if you all noticed.
She's always listening and participating in the background, so I think, you know, that says a lot about her interest.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Marianne. Couple other, I know it's 6:03, so I'll just say, these things can wait. The one, of course, paying attention to what's happening at the federal level with the budget, you know, definitely what's out there now would be significant and bad when it comes to housing. And so something that I'll say we're just keeping our eyes on, and for instance, the right now it would cut public housing and the Housing Choice Voucher Program by 43% and really change the way it's administered. So realize this is the start of the conversation in terms of the budget, but that's something to just put on your all's radar.
Thanks, Sam. Any questions or comments before we move on to moving on? Okay. Since PDSD is not here, that's what I've heard. We can move on to next steps. The only thing that is needs to be updated on the agenda is that the Equitable Housing Strategy Subcommittee, we're going to meet the following Tuesday, not on the 17th, same time, 1 to 2:30. But you can see all of the meeting dates in the next commission meeting. I did hear a idea to meet in person to celebrate Marianne and just to get together. So maybe we have a party in July. So we'll talk about that. That's it. As far as I'm concerned, is there anything else that we need to say or deal with before we adjourn? All right, y'all. Thanks for a great meeting, and we are adjourned.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.